21-60160. And if I mispronounce it, let me know. It's Escobar-Verdicio versus Garland. Is it Ms. Kovacic?
Yes, Kovacic.
Sorry. We're ready?
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Zeta Kovacic, and I, along with my co-counsel, Johanna Gilarroyo, represent the petitioner, Mr. Rafael Escobar Verdicio. We would like to respectfully request 5 minutes, reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The board made the following three errors in its decision. First, by failing to review the immigration judge's adverse credibility determination, the board erred in disregarding all of Mr. Escobar's testimony and corroborating evidence that suggests that he was in fact persecuted on account of his political opinion and imputed political opinion. Second, the board erred in affirming the immigration judge's decision because the decision did not contain findings of fact or analysis regarding the cumulative effects of the harms Mr. Escobar suffered, which date back to 1996 and are corroborated by the record, the evidence in the record, and rise to a level of persecution necessary to form the basis of his asylum claim. Lastly, the board erred in affirming the immigration judge's decision as to his well-founded fear of future persecution independent of the past persecution he suffered, because the immigration judge's decision did not evaluate Mr. Escobar's fear of future persecution using the four-part test set forth in Zhao, and it required Mr. Escobar to offer direct proof of the Cuban government's motive, and because substantial evidence compelled the finding of a well-founded fear of future persecution, which DHS did not and cannot rebut. I will address these issues in order. First, in failing to address the immigration judge's adverse credibility determination, the board erred in disregarding all of Mr. Escobar's evidence, which suggests that he was in fact persecuted on account of his political opinion. This court has found grounds for remand where the board failed to evaluate all the evidence about potential mixed motives. Here, the board did not consider any evidence in the record relating to whether Cuban government officials were also motivated, at least partly, by Mr. Escobar's political or imputed political opinion. The board failed to consider the ample evidence in the record supporting the possibility that an illegitimate motivation was present here. For example, Mr. Escobar submitted a handwritten declaration in which he testified that he was fired from his job as a teacher in 1996 after he refused to participate in political activities at his place of employment. And he had held this position for 10 years prior to this incident. The immigration judge and the board failed to consider all of the evidence that was filed by Mr. Escobar concurrently with his I-589 application, all of which corroborates that he was fired from his job, a position that he had for 10 years as a teacher, including his degree that he graduated and was a licensed teacher.
I just want to make clear, you're not maintaining your motion to remand or the appeal of the withholding of removal or the CAT claim, are you?
You're
relying on the asylum claim at this point because the other ones have an exhaustion problem, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And they were not argued on the appeal brief. Co-counsel and I did not appeal to the board. It was another attorney. So those issues were pretty much waived. So we're just going to be discussing the asylum, basically just the asylum claim.
But you believe you have a strong asylum claim because the state has identified him as a counter-revolutionary? And that's it's right in the heart of political asylum. Is that your position?
Yes. And also, you know, there's 23 years worth of evidence in the record, dating back to as early as December of 1996, which indicate that he's been persecuted for 23 years, and none of that was considered by the immigration judge when determining whether or not he suffered past persecution. The immigration judge only considered the last two detentions that Mr. Escobar suffered prior to leaving Cuba. And it was years worth of things that they made him go through, including sentencing him to 9 months at a labor camp. And none of this made it into the record. It was filed right along with his I-589 application, and you can tell that it was filed at that point because the evidence is right after the number on the record of proceedings. The I-589 application stops at 310, and then the evidence follows. So all of this evidence was filed, but it was not considered when the judge made his past persecution findings.
When you say it wasn't considered, do you mean because the court didn't talk about it? Or do you mean that it actually, you can maintain that it was not considered?
Well, it definitely wasn't considered, and because the judge specifically says that the two detentions that he was subjected to, even though he was beaten on during one of them, they don't rise to the level of persecution. But the judge didn't consider the other 23 years of harm that he suffered cumulatively. Also, the transcripts indicate that there are six exhibits which were entered into the record. The notice to appear was marked 1, the credible fear worksheet was marked 2, the credible fear summary was marked 3, the advisals was marked exhibit 4, the I-589 application was marked exhibit 5, and then the court also marked exhibit 6, the 2018, I believe it is, Department of State Cuba country condition reports. There's no evidence. No evidence was marked into the record, even though it was submitted. And at one point, the judge discussed it in the transcripts, but it was not marked into the record and it was not considered. And it was definitely not considered when the judge made his past persecution determination, because the judge specifically states that the two times that he was detained do not rise to the level of persecution.
Okay.
Counsel, do you contend that conclusion was wrong? Just focusing on the two detentions?
The two detentions, I mean, the Board of, in unpublished decisions, the Board of Immigration Appeals has found similar situations where past persecution was established based on a small number of a few detentions. But it's because when you look at the grand scheme of things, the situation in Cuba, once a person is targeted as being a dissenting or criticizing the Cuban government, that's it. They have a target on their back for the rest of their lives. So I think that in a lot of cases, it's taken into the whole totality of the situation is considered. In this case, it was not. It was not considered.
Counsel, the board noted in its decision a handful of cases from our court, and I could understand that you would think that they're wrong. I have no idea if they're right or wrong, but I know that they're decisions of our court that require a much more significant level of physical violence to rise to the level of persecution. What I'm trying to make sure I understand is your argument that those decisions are wrong, or do you recognize that those decisions are the precedent of our court and that they necessarily involve facts that are more severe than those that apply to your client?
So I believe that when all of Mr. Escobar's, all of the harm that he suffered is taken into consideration, that together it rises to the level of persecution necessary to meet the standards that are discussed in the cases that are cited by the board.
How do you distinguish Gattani versus Barr? I'm sorry, Judge Oldham.
I think that's one of the cases that my co-counsel actually did the research on. I wouldn't know if she's able to talk about that, or we have to wait for her to rebuttal. I'm not sure, Your Honor, because I didn't review that one case.
Okay. That's one where somebody was beaten, I believe, a couple of times to the point of unconsciousness, maybe, if I recall. And we said that was not adequate for asylum, if I recalled it correctly.
Well, I don't know the circumstances of that particular case, but I can say that when you have someone that has been detained multiple times over a 23-year period, and the mistreatment and the harms that this person suffered are physical, psychological, economical, and also deprived him of his liberty. And most of the time, everything, all of the encounters that he had after he expressed his political opinion were pretext with illegitimate reasons that were not explored by the judge or the court, but are based on the fact that he criticized the government and he became a target for the government. So I believe that together, everything that happened to Mr. Escobar rises to the level of persecution, and maybe one incident of being beaten is not enough for this court. But when you have 23 years of situations, including being sent to a labor camp for 9 months, I believe that constitutes persecution.
So it's that it's more than just a couple of beatings. It's the whole trajectory. And that's because so you wouldn't stand alone on the beatings themselves. That wouldn't be enough under our case law.
I believe that under the Fifth Circuit, no, it wouldn't, unless we can change the court's mind here today. No, it wouldn't be enough under the Fifth Circuit case law.
You need the entire trajectory of his whole situation in order to win today. Is that correct?
Yes, and I believe that it should have been considered, because it's like a story. You know, the immigration judge didn't explore and probe, and because this was a pro se respondent who was detained. So the immigration judge didn't probe and build the record and ask the questions necessary to ask. I mean, you're a teacher, you graduated, you have a degree. Why are you not working as a teacher? That would be a basic question to ask, especially when he provided a handwritten statement explaining to the judge, you know, how this all started. Also, I think that we covered what I was going to say on my second point, which is, you know, the cumulative effect of all that happened to him within the last 23 years. So I'd like to take a moment and talk about the third reason that the board erred, that is when the judge when the judge failed to evaluate Mr. Escobar's fear of future persecution using the four-part test in Zhao, and required Mr. Escobar to offer direct proof of the Cuban government's motives. And the substantial evidence of the record that I've been discussing, compels a finding of well-founded fear of future persecution independent of the respondent's past persecution. And the immigration judge's decision in discussing Mr. Escobar's well-founded fear of future persecution, the judge found that Mr. Escobar had a subjective fear of persecution. And this finding is noteworthy because the subjective prong is satisfied only if the applicant's fear is genuine, based on credible testimony and the evidence of record. And earlier in the judge's decision, the judge found that the Mr. Escobar was not credible. So if Mr. Escobar was found credible earlier in the decision, why did the judge find that he had met the subjective fear of persecution prong? I thought that was noteworthy because it could infer that he was in fact credible and that the evidence of record was sufficient to establish past persecution. However, the judge determined that Mr. Escobar did not meet the objectively reasonable prong because he did not provide sufficient evidence to show that anyone in Cuba was still looking for him.
Counsel, your time has expired. You've saved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. DiMaggio.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Giovanni DiMaggio on behalf of the Attorney General. Your Honors, Mr. Escobar Verdesia fails to satisfy his burden on petition for review to establish that the evidence he submitted to the immigration court compels reversal of the agency's basis for denying his political asylum claim. Now, it's critical here that the court, just like the agency did, acknowledge the fact that there are applicable legal standards here for asylum applicants that govern Mr. Escobar Verdesia's claim as much as any other asylum applicant's claim. And as relevant here, Mr. Escobar Verdesia was required to show, among other things, one, that the past or feared future harm was extreme enough to amount to persecution, and two, that it bore a nexus to a protected ground. And in this instance, the agency's decision was supported by substantial evidence in as much as it found with respect to the past persecution that his, or the past persecution claims, that his encounters with Cuban authorities were either amounted to food regulation citations bearing no nexus to a political opinion, or they did not involve harm extreme enough to rise to the level of persecution. And I need to disabuse the court of the suggestion that counsel makes that the court and the agency are supposed to aggregate past incidents that are unrelated to protected grounds. As you know, the court affirmed and applied in Aguilar-Chavez, which the government cites in its brief. In that case, the court rejected a petitioner's argument that past harm should have qualified cumulatively as past harm, as past persecution, where the petitioner impermissibly attempted to aggregate past incidents relating to her family social group with other past incidents unrelated to the family social group. And here,
why is this unrelated?
Well, Your Honor,
why is the past behavior over 23 years unrelated?
So the past behavior over 23 years is unrelated because for 23 years, you have Mr. Escobar Verdesia receiving violations for various food regulation violations that has no connection to any political opinion. At no point in any of that over 20-year period does he indicate that the police officers, or the finding officials, I suppose would be more accurate to say, inquired about his political opinion as they were finding him, or before they were finding him, or even after they find him. There's just nothing indicating that there's a tether to his political opinion, as opposed to him just, being treated, sure, unfairly, with respect to, his testimony that sometimes they would give him a permit and other times they would take the same permit away when the conditions of his business didn't really change. And sure, that might be unfair, that might amount to harassment, but a finding that the relevant question here is whether any of that was connected to his political opinion. And he didn't provide any evidence that all of those years of food violation citations somehow connected to his political opinion, unfair as he might have felt that those food citations were.
So only in 2019, when the chief of police identified him as being a person who did not agree with the regime in Cuba and was trying to force him to vote. So is that when you believe that it becomes the relevant time period? When do you believe it becomes the relevant time period?
Well, Your Honor, all of it is relevant. I don't mean to suggest that, you know, the earlier years are irrelevant, but the key here is that what the agency does here is when it applies these facts and this chronology and all of these items, the actions that happened here to the legal framework, the distinguishing feature of the earlier 20 plus years of food citations is that those have no connection to his political opinion. And then when it turns to his encounters, which were limited, he had approximately three threats, two detentions, only one of which resulted in an assault, which is not to belittle what happened there, but as he admits, you know, was not sufficiently severe to require any kind of hospitalization. All that happened was he had a split lip and nothing permanent. These were all cabined.
I thought he was did require hospitalization, or he went to the. I thought he was taken to the hospital for treatment.
Yeah,
he. Forgive me, Your Honor. You're right. He. What I meant to emphasize with that. It resulted only in a split lip and didn't result in any permanent physical injuries. And
that was one of the two times.
Right. And the second time he was detained, he described it as involving no physical harm.
But it was psychological torture.
He did not. Well, it was, he said he was, abused psychologically and deprived of sleep and food for the period of his detention.
So we have to take it that he's had two times of being tortured that are connected to his political views, that he's got a nexus, that he's, you know, it's right after they tell him he has to vote before the committee or whatever. And it's not some, a lot of times these are not people that are the government, and we say, oh, it's the government and it's acquiescing. This is the government doing this. So yes. Can you help us if there are two times? Would other circuits hold this was enough? Or if the BIA and the IJ had not found it, where is our precedent in line with other circuits? Of course, we're bound by our precedent. I'm not trying to suggest otherwise.
Sure, Your Honor. I'm not aware of what other circuits are doing with this specific type of claim. I know this circuit, in cases like Abdel Masai, Singh, and Jatani, has affirmed similar findings from the agency on a similar factual backdrop, including in Abdel Masai, the non-citizen there experienced two arrests, two detentions, and beatings, and that was insufficient to rise to the level of persecution. In Singh, which one of Your Honors, actually it was you, Judge Elrod, that you thought it was Jatani, but you were referring to Singh, which was a case where a non-citizen was beaten twice, once to the point of unconsciousness, and also received death threats. And that was insufficient to rise to the level of persecution. Jatani is another case where a non-citizen was threatened by on three occasions, one of which resulted in physical injury, and that didn't rise to the level of persecution. So the agency's decision here is in line with this court's precedent, and this court would not be stepping out of bounds or out of line with its own prior decisions addressing harm that was on par or even worse than the kind that was at issue here. So, Your Honor, and
what about Tamara Gomez? Can you talk about the Tamara Gomez case? Are you familiar with that one?
Was it cited by either of the parties, Your Honor?
I thought so, but perhaps not. If it's not one you're familiar with, that's okay.
I'm not. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm not familiar, but can you repeat the name of the case?
Tamara Gomez.
Tamara Gomez. And do you have a citation?
447 F 3rd 345.
Okay. If the court would like, I could provide.
I'm sorry. It's 343 is the beginning of the case.
343.
No, I'm not asking you to do homework. I'm just curious. It's that one they did find it was enough. And so I'm trying to compare and contrast.
Understood. Forgive me, Your Honor, for not being familiar with that one.
That's okay.
So the other thing I wanted to make sure I address here is that the backdrop, which Your Honor alludes to in her questioning and certainly petitioner's counsel alludes to in their presentation, that the backdrop of Cuba's ever ongoing political revolution doesn't require drawing the inference that the government's enforcement of the food safety regulations is politically motivated. I just want to make sure that that's clear. And again, I can't emphasize enough that there was no evidence linking the food citations to his political opinion. And Tesfa Michael is the case on point there, which the government relies on in its brief, that exemplifies kind of in an exaggerated way, even more so than here, how the geopolitical backdrop of the day doesn't necessarily inform what the agency has to infer from the actions taken by the government. I won't go into that any further unless the court wants me to expand on that point. And then again, as to the food violations, as to the limited threats, detention, and assault that he experienced from September 2018 or so to March 2019, first of all, this was cabined to a limited period of time. Consider the fact that he's, you know, today a 54-year-old man. He spent over 50 years in Cuba. And in all those years, including all the years of the encounters about the food violations, never did he, encounter a situation where, as occurred during that short window of time, that he was accused of and detained on the basis of being a counter-revolutionary, which all was tethered to this constitutional vote that was occurring at the time. And then his failure to attend the vote and subsequently his being arrested under suspicion of creating and posting posters, counter-revolutionary posters.
So how does this fall short from the, just even the, what makes it fall short during the relevant time period?
Well, it's the severity of the harm. As to the actions that took place during that small window of time, it's that the
psychological torture, beating, arrest,
there was no finding
detention.
He was
psychologically tortured when he was kept for the 48 hours the second time. And I don't think that there's a questioning on the credibility on that. That did happen, didn't it?
Well, he alleges that he was subjected to psychological harm. I don't recall if he used the word torture. Record 234 would be the relevant portion of the transcript.
Does the case depend upon whether it's torture or harm? I mean, what would be enough? How does it fall short?
It falls short because, again, the ultimately the nature of the harm, including the frequency and the degree to which he was harmed, doesn't rise to the level of persecution when you compare it to other cases that this court has considered similar or worse harm.
Would it need three incidents of detention? Would it need a broken legs too? What would be enough?
Your Honor, it's fact specific. And for me to speculate, I'm not sure it would be very helpful. I think what's more helpful is to focus on the cases where the court has upheld a finding of insufficiently serious harm to rise to the level of persecution, where the harm was as serious or worse than here. And that would be Abdullah Masai, Singh, and Jatani as the primary examples that the government cites in its brief, where, again, he was only threatened on about three occasions here. He only had two detentions, and only one of them involved in a physical assault that in any event did not result in serious physical or lasting injuries. And we're, turning to the issue of the future persecution, which is also important to the agency's decision. The evidence he submitted to the immigration court was insufficient to show that the authorities continue to still be interested in him and continue to seek him out based on any political animus. Because aside from his having been fined for food safety violations bearing no nexus to his political opinion, his past encounters with the Cuban authorities were limited to just those three incidents, strictly relating to his refusal to vote for the new Cuban constitution.
But I felt he was told if he didn't cease and desist in his political belief that they would make him disappear or perhaps disappear in prison.
That's, well, they issued similar threats to him in 2019 when they told him they needed to vote for the new Cuban constitution, and to the contrary, what they did instead was they brought him to that February meeting where they, you know, had him speak about his views, and that's where they detained him, threatened him, and yes, assaulted him, resulting in the split lip, but ultimately released him. And then similarly, when they detained him again in the end of March, it wasn't even as bad as that prior detention. They detained him, they threatened him again. They did deprive him of food and sleep, to Judge Elrod's point, which was psychologically abusive, but it was a limited period of time. And then again, they released him. So, and what's critical here, Your Honor, too, on this point, is that nothing else happened to Mr. Escobar Verdecia for the several months that he was remaining in the country, from March 2019 to May of 20th, 2019, when he left for the United States. He received no more threats and was not harmed again, which cuts against any suggestion that he may make that the government was after him at that point and, you know, nothing would stop them from coming back to him. So that also supports the agency's finding here that the evidence he submitted did not show sufficiently that the Cuban authorities were still seeking him out because of any political animus. Jatani actually is another case that applies here, where there were three occasions on which the petitioner was threatened there. The agency deemed these to be one-off incidents related to a one-time event. In that situation, it was an Albanian election in comparison to the Cuban constitutional election that was unlikely to recur. And where that petitioner, having experienced no further threats despite remaining in Albania for months after the last instance of threatening behavior, the agency there found there was no evidence in the record to suggest that anyone had been looking for him in Albania since the election, much less that he would be targeted in the future. And we're on a similar factual footing in this instance with respect to the agency's finding that he didn't establish a well-founded fear of future persecution. I do want to note as well, with respect to my colleague's summoning of, you know, the IJ's failure to conduct a mixed motive analysis, failure to consider certain evidence, allegedly in the record regarding a labor camp his prior job as a teacher. These are all arguments that were not exhausted before the agency, and the court lacks jurisdiction to review them. They're also waived in the opening brief. So that would be another basis for the court not to consider them as a basis for whether to uphold the court's decision here.
That, are you saying that the evidence was there, right?
So the evidence, well, first of all, as to the mixed motive argument, the argument was not there. And the labor camp reference, I did find that, and that was a reference to some kind of punishment he allegedly, that the government allegedly doled out in connection to these food violations. Again, there was no connection to any political opinion, just to the extent that Your Honor, is concerned about there being a link there. There isn't. But so I'm not contesting that evidence is there. What I'm pointing out to the court is that petitioner can't rely on it now belatedly and fault the agency for not, you know, considering it, where they didn't exhaust that issue before the board, which would have given a chance to address the issue head on. And therefore, the court doesn't have jurisdiction over it, and also didn't raise that issue in their opening brief, waiving the issue before the court as well as failing to exhaust it before the agency. Similarly, also, just to the extent Your Honor's question goes to the job, the professorship that he lost, that evidence is in the record. But again, that's not an issue that he pressed before the board or before or even before this court in any legal argument. And just
would
to
that be
short,
enough if he had lost his job as a professor and he had been?
No, because again,
tortured.
Putting aside the exhaustion and the waiver issues, there's no link to his losing his job supposedly in sometime in the 90s. The basis for his past persecution and future persecution claims here, at most that would indicate that, you know, the school fired him for his political opinion, but he doesn't tether that to, the actions over the course of the subsequent 20 years for the food safety violations, and certainly doesn't tether that to the actions of the police in 2018 and 2019, when he was suspected for failure to vote for the Cuban Constitution and for allegedly putting up posters of being a counter-revolutionary. So, Your Honors, I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything here, but if Your Honors have no further questions, for those reasons and for the reasons in the government's brief, the court should uphold the agency's decision and deny the petition for review, as Mr. Escobar, again, has failed to meet his burden to show that the record before the immigration court compels a reversal of the agency's bases for denying his political asylum claim.
Thank you. Is it Gil Arroyo, Ms.?
Yes, Your Honor. Good afternoon, judges, and may it please the court. My name is Johanna Gil Arroyo, and I also represent the petitioner, Mr. Escobar Vertez Young. In regards to the immigration judge, the board, and the respondent, in its brief on page 21, assert that Mr. Escobar Vertez Young's fines beginning in 1996 were solely a result of food and safety violations and were not on account of political animus, and do not connect to his later events in terms of political opinion. His oldest fine, however, dating back to 1996, was issued by the police after they unlawfully entered his home, searched his home, and obtained the food from this search. And you can find that on the record of appeal on page 241. This honorable court has also previously held that Abdel Messiah, the prosecution for violating laws of a country generally do not constitute persecution unless that punishment was motivated by a protected ground and there is excessive and arbitrary action in its nature. This would include what this court has given examples, severe beatings, being sent to a Nazi concentration camp. Here, the majority of all of his fines, dismissals from work, his detentions, could be deemed to have been motivated by Mr. Escobar's political opinion. As he did testify, the fines were a form of harassment. Quote, when you don't work for a state or pertain to the party, it's illegal, unquote. Record of Appeal, page 241. The fines and his detentions were excessive and arbitrary in nature as they spanned about 23 years, and he was even sent to a labor camp for 9 months. Record of Appeal, page 238. Please see also Record of Appeal, page 316 to 318. His fear in essence was not prosecution, but the persecution he endured for not participating in his Communist Party. Even country conditions also affirm this. And if we discuss Tamara Gomez v. Gonzalez in there, what Judge Eldred was discussing is that it was a Colombian FARC. He was the opposition to the Colombian FARC. He went in, rescued some people, and then they found out who he was. They began calling him incessantly, targeting his family, saying, we're going to kill you. And then when he moved, they also found him again, continued the calling. And then eventually, I believe there was a bombing that occurred and he left with his family once they found out that he was targeting members. I would say in this way as well, the respondent was continuously harassed by the police for 23 years. I would note, I don't know if it's out of my boundaries, but the country at that point, I would say up until 2016, did not permit and I guess exit from the country. And so Mr. Escobar most likely was unable to leave the country at that time. Nevertheless, in Tamara v. Gomez, this court also held that harm resulting from persecution does not have to be physical. It could be an economic disadvantage or deprivation of liberty, which is the case here with Mr. Escobar. The respondent also touched on Tesla Michael v. Gonzalez in saying that that is obviously present here in this case, but Mr. Escobar Vergesia's numerous fines, his threats, arbitrary detention, and beatings were not on account of mundane attributes
of prosecutorial conduct, but instead they were actual political inquisition because it lasted for 23 years. In Jatani, I know the petitioner there, this court held that he was detained on three occasions, one of which resulted in a physical assault, but it was insufficient to be deemed persecution because he did not have the quality sustained systematic effort to target an individual on the basis of a protected ground. And he stayed an additional 6 months after his persecution. But what is systemic and what is systematic? Well, something is methodical, organized, and intentional, we call it systematic. And when something is widespread and affects many parts of it, it's called systemic. Here, the Cuban government has systematically made every effort to deter political opposition, including implementation of neighborhood informants, such as the CDR, but has systemically led to abuse of political dissidents by way of arbitrary arrests, threats, detentions, and beatings, the like of which Mr. Escobar has also endured over 23 years. Mr. Escobar, unlike Jatani, left 2 months from Cuba. Unlike Jatani, who stayed an additional 6 months. Here, the substantial evidence in the record, which includes Mr. Escobar's testimony, witness letters, summons, and Cuba Human Rights Report, compels a finding that there is a direct connection between the majority of fines he received, his dismissal from work, the numerous threats, his detentions, his beatings, and psychological harm he suffered in his lack of support for the Communist Party. For these reasons, we ask this Honorable Court to remand these proceedings.
Thank you, counsel. We have your arguments. Your case is under submission. Thank you.